would encourage the students to stay in touch. You've lived with wonderful folks who have shared life with you and enjoyed you, and now is the time to have a great week, but you're going to go home and just stay in touch. And it's interesting because one of the girls that my wife and I hosted came back on her own and stayed with us, and you can do that. So please stay in touch. It's a blessing. And Christine shaking her head in agreement. Yeah, this thing with the peaches was crazy. I wasn't even thinking peaches. I'll tell you what I've been thinking is our garden. And one day in Germany, Kristen just asked me, hey, how's the church garden? And I said, you know, when I left it, I couldn't tell how it was going to be. I couldn't tell if it was going to be great or just average or whatever. So I wrote to Daniel Schutz, who just lives right over here, and he loves to take pictures. He loves to take pictures of flowers and such. And I said, will you send me some pictures of the garden? And he did, and maybe some of you saw them. And I'm like, are you kidding me? It is beautiful and wonderful and producing. And I saw some other people's postings of tomatoes they'd picked and just a wonderful, wonderful thing. So, again, Bruce and Lynn, I know you guys have kind of led the way and you've had some helpers. And it's not done by any sense of the imagination, but thanks so much because it is great. And when I introduce myself or am asked who I am and what I'm doing here around town, and I say I'm a pastor at Jacob's Well, more often than not say, oh, you're the ones with the garden. And that's a great blessing. So thanks again for that. To the sisters Lee, I'm so thrilled you're here. It's just so good to see you. For a beautiful season of our lives, we worshiped together, we read books together, we did poetry together, we did all these things in small groups. Those were rich times, and I'll never forget them. And one of the people who was also a part of that was Rochelle. And for those who don't know Rochelle, she was also a Georgia Peach, and she is in Morocco now with the Peace Corps, but her stepfather just died, and it's been a matter of prayer to try to get her home so that she could see him before he went. So please pray for her. She loved him very, very much. That's evident, and I think he was a good, good guy. And so their heart aches right now for that. Our trip... It accomplished all the purposes that I wanted it to personally. And so personally, my greatest desire for this trip was that I reconnect in a strong way with my daughter, who has always been very, very precious to me, but who to not see sometimes for 2 years or whatever, that's really hard. It's very hard on both of us because we are wired the same way. And when we're together, it's either all systems go, we're on the same page, or we are battling. And that's just the truth. And so I'd lived with her when I was in grad school, and that was a wonderful season of my life. But I know that this last year has been very, very hard on her emotionally, and anxiety and her heart acting up, and she's a mother of four little rascals, and boy, they really are. They're wonderful. I love them to pieces, and they're a challenge. And Joel, her husband, works full-time at Black Forest Academy, but he's also a full-time student at Regent University in Virginia Beach getting his PhD. And he just doesn't have much time to be dad and husband and all the things that he likes to do. So it's been a rough go. And I wanted to just be with Kristen to connect with her. We'd both had years that were very painful to us, and I thought if we can get together, we can love on each other and talk about the Lord and good things, and that happened. Oh, my gosh, we had a wonderful time. She only got mad at me twice, and I don't think I deserved it either time, really, to be honest with you, but, you know. But she did, and so it was a great, great time. And you know, it's going to happen this weekend. When you say goodbye to somebody and they're across the ocean. So you hug and you hold and you squeeze and you cry. And when you're holding that person, like she was holding me, it's just, there's a language in that. There's a statement in just how much this embrace signifies our love for each other. And that happened in a great way for both Sue and me. I think it's one of the finest trips we've ever had. You know, I've said before, do not go on vacation with us, and I still say that. Don't do it. Things will happen that are out of this world, and those things happened. But all in all, except for going the wrong way on one-way roads and driving on the wrong side of the road and forgetting about those kind of, that is weird. So for over 2 weeks, I drove on the wrong side of the road, shifting with your left hand, and that was really odd. But we had a great trip, and I thank all those who prayed for us. I thank the church for just letting me do it. It was a wonderful investment. During this time, I would say probably about the second day I was there, the first day I was there, you don't know if you're coming or going. In fact, I had a layover in Dublin of 8 hours, and I hadn't slept at all the night before, and I'm no good without sleep. But I couldn't just sit in that airport and vegetate, so I got the courage to get on a bus and go to downtown Dublin, and Abby has done the same thing, went to Trinity College. If you ever go to Dublin, go to Trinity College. It is a remarkable place. It's like you're stepping onto a movie set when you go in there because of just the nature and the beauty of things. They have some very special exhibits there that are great. The Book of Kells is a once-in-the-world kind of expression of the Gospel of Matthew. That it's a book that changed Ireland in a lot of ways. And then there's a library there called the Long Room. And I just can't express to you the beauty and the power of this place. And so I did all that, and I'm about half awake. And then I thought, you know, I haven't eaten. And I think that way. If I haven't eaten, then something must be done about it. So I crawled into a pub, and I didn't know what to do. I was so tired. Sitting down was good. And I sat down, and no one waited on me. And I thought, okay, then I need to get up and go to the bar and order. And so I got up and went to the bar, and the guy said, sit down, we'll wait on you. You know, I'm like, you haven't. But they did, and I was by myself, and it was all good. And I really relaxed, and I relaxed so much that my brand new Cubs hat that I had bought at Wrigley Field a week or two before is still there in the pub. So I'm spreading the gospel of the Cubs in Ireland. So that was how that started. About the second day, I was in Germany. So then I flew to Germany. Actually, I flew to Switzerland, where I was picked up and taken to Germany. I began this openness in my soul. It was intentional. Just saying to God, my soul needs work. It needs you to revive it, to correct it where it needs correction, to support it where it needs support, and all these things. And so I went into this trip with an idea of it being a soulful trip. And about 2 days in, this work began in my soul. But it was interesting because of what I was studying so much. I'm always studying history. I'm always reading history. And to be in the Black Forest, right by the Rhine River, the Rhine so famous in the 20th century for being a border in two wars, and to be with these people in a fabulously beautiful place. It is so beautiful there. And a good thing that happened was it's the time of year where they're harvesting small grains. Now, what does that mean? Harvesting small grains. It means this, that the wheat and the barley and the oats are being harvested. And the fields there are about the size of our garden. The whole garden together, that would be a common field. They're not very big. They're little patches. Why? Because the ground's not level. Everything is a flowing landscape. And they have these small fields. They have fences everywhere because there's a lot of livestock. But what you see is a patchwork of golds, different shades of gold, and of hay, and some corn. The corn they raise is for silage, and so you don't expect it to be exactly like we would our field corn. But that is a powerful thing to me because I'm a farm kid, and to watch these farmers do a great job, harvest, making straw, and just being out there and engaging nature the way they do, that was a very powerful message for me. And so what does that do for me? It makes me feel at home. If I was in Berlin, I would have been going, because I can't stand that. I have to be where it's more natural. And so that's so good. It's just all around you, and it's wonderful. So that was going on in my soul. But also in my soul was this sense of lostness. Not my necessary lostness, although I certainly have some. I think we all do. But the lostness of what was once great. And there isn't much sense that Christianity, in general, Jesus in particular, has much influence or sway on the local culture. Now, the church we went to, and I wrote to on my Facebook, that it's like going to this church. They do church exactly the way we do it. It's as informal as our church is. It's as comfortable as our church is. They do not sing like you sing. They have a song leader, and there's just kind of a drone of singing, and that's kind of sad because we sing so well here. But otherwise, it's a wonderful fellowship, and I felt so comfortable in that. But that's pretty much English speakers that are there. And they're there for Christian reasons, some of them. Some of them work in the pharmaceutical industry and so on. But that felt very comfortable. So then off to Ireland we go. Now, you know that the day I was supposed to go, the French air traffic controllers decide to strike. So we're stuck, and that's classic. But we did get there. And I immediately, in where we were in Ireland, I immediately felt at home. And I did for a couple of reasons. My ancestors came from County Cork. We were just north of County Cork. And I wish I'd known that as a young man, because I didn't. But we didn't know it as a family until recently. But it makes me need to go back and do more genealogical stuff. But where we went, we drove clear across Ireland. Beautiful drive. And I know I have one sleeve that's low, so that's the way it is. Okay. What? No, it doesn't matter, Mom. There it is. Okay. We drove all the way across Ireland from coast to coast and didn't, now, this is another agricultural thing, but it's unusual. There was not one row crop, not one. It's all pasture. It's all pastoral. It's all amazingly beautiful. And if you think in your mind's eye that Ireland and Scotland and rural England are stone fences and narrow roads, you're right. That's all there is. And some of the roads that we got on, and Sue was with me several times, are wide enough for one vehicle. And there are stone walls on both sides. And you're going that way, and here comes the truck going this way. And something has to give. We were driving a little Romanian car that I hope I never see again. It was not good. And we had to, oh, we came so close so many times to just losing it. It's so narrow, but so quaint. So very, very quaint. And so my soul in Germany is, I'll tell you what it was struggling with. It was struggling with the German soul. It was struggling with a nation that in the 20th century was so injured. So injured and brought so much of it on itself, but nonetheless, the boys who died, the families who died, the pain of it all is still just kind of present. And there are memorials everywhere, and you see these, and you see family names and so on. Very, very hard. And I'm struggling. Where was the church? Where was the church? What was the church doing? I know where the church was, and I know what the church was doing. And so then this became, well, what difference does it make, Dave? What difference does it make? And the difference it makes is this. We don't want America. We don't want Illinois. We don't want Bloomington Normal. We don't want Jacob's Well to become a place where the real gospel, the powerful, true story of Jesus loses its power. We don't want that to happen. We don't want it to be exchanged for man's ideas, which become a kind of idolatry. And that's what we're going to study today, a very powerful passage in Isaiah about that. And so then we go to Ireland, and I make friends, and Sue did too. We make friends with everybody over there. There's a difference in personality between Germans who do things right, do things well. It's the cleanest place you've ever seen. It's beautiful, the flowers, the everything. They're not really happy that you're there if you don't speak German. Now, I have an approach to communicating with the Germans that Kristen finally told me, Dad, it doesn't work. And this is what it is. So every day we went to the store. You go to the store every day because your refrigerator is this big. True. And so you go to the bakery, you go whatever, every day. So every day we went to the store. And every day we'd go to the bakery. And every day I would order what we were going to get. And I'd say, okay, I'll take two of those. And then there would be no reaction. And I'd say, I'll take two of those. And finally she said, Dad, just getting louder doesn't get the message across. And she'd be like, I'm thinking, of course it does. You know, if I really say four, which I did, no. And it got to be kind of a joke with us. But they do things well. They generally weren't very engaging. One of the things is, in Germany, children are not to be heard. Whew. That was hard with my grandkids because each one of them expects to be heard, and they're not to go out to eat. And we did that a lot, too. So there's a little discomfort in that. Now, you go to Ireland, and I appreciated this. Children are everywhere. Every restaurant had a child's menu. The kids were embraced, and, of course, so important, we understood each other. Their English was good. They were easier to understand than the Scottish that we've had before. Mike, I so much want to talk to you about this because Mike loves Ireland like I do. And they were so engaging. I mean, just friendly. One day, Sue and I go to a castle with Kristen's family. It's called Boonrady Castle. And there's a wonderful gift shop there. And it's our 40th wedding anniversary this year. So I have not worn a wedding ring since early on in our marriage, for two very good reasons. 2 weeks. The first reason is I hate wearing anything. I just do this all the time. Yeah. And so I hated it. Second one is I gained so much weight that what fit on my ring finger soon fit on my little finger. And so that was bad too. But we're there, and I see these, this is a Celtic design ring. I see this, and I need a salesperson, and so there's this girl with a funny name I'd never heard before. Do you remember her name? Yeah, we don't know what it was. But she liked us. Oh my gosh, it was really something. She just gave herself to us and talked to us and embraced us and helped us buy rings. We have look-alike rings, look-alike, we're going steady. And I lost mine on the way home. I thought it was still in Germany, and I found it in a dirty pair of pants in my suitcase. So we're talking to this girl, and I had been to, and this is another reason I love the Irish. They embrace things Irish. They really see themselves as there's no one like us in all the world, and we're going to do the Irish things as well. So that means there are so many pubs and restaurants in the smallest of towns that every night have music. There's a local somebody or groups of somebody who can play these Irish instruments and who can dance. Oh, we saw people dancing with that, what became clogging in the southeast United States when the Scotch-Irish came in is this old Irish dancing. And this one gal talked about the dancing she was doing was from the 15th century. And she's a young girl, and they just embrace and love all that, and so I do too. But the other thing that I loved about them is they have two sports that are distinctly theirs. One is called Gaelic football. Gaelic football is a blend of soccer, a blend of rugby, and a blend of American football. However, you wear no pads. And it is rough and tumble and nonstop motion, and they love it. And I did too. But the thing I loved the most was a game called hurling. Are you familiar with hurling? Hurling has a stick and a very, very hard, little bit smaller than a baseball, but as hard as a baseball ball. And this is a nonstop sport, and the skill level of this is beyond me. It's just fabulous. And I was there thinking, had I grown up playing this, or my boys grown up playing this, it would have been quite the thing in our souls, I think, because of this. And this is the way sports were when I was a kid. The entire community is with their team. So we're talking to this girl, and I'd been to a hurling match, local hurling match. There were about 6,000 people there. And I just say to her, do you like hurling? And she says, me blood runs with the blue and saffron. Which was their local, and she was serious. And she goes into all this, and Sue's sitting there not knowing what is going on, and this girl and I are back and forth about this. And then she says, are you going to the next game? And I said, I think I am. And in fact, can I say right now, they're playing Galway, and so I have to leave in a few minutes. So I went, no. But they are, and if they win this, then they go to the All-Ireland Championship. That's big. So we talked to this girl. That this is in Boonrady, which is south of where we're staying. The next day, we make a long trip to Galway. Anybody been to Galway in here? Yeah, you were there. Ancient seaport of a town. Really neat. We're in some kind of public place, a museum maybe, and this lady comes up to me, American, and she says, were you in the gift shop in Boonrady? Now, this would be like, were you in Chicago yesterday? And did I see you and hear you? And were you talking to a girl there about hurling? And I didn't recognize this woman. I said, yeah. Yeah, we were. She says, I remember you. I'm like, what has just happened here? We being followed or what? Oh, yeah, and then Sue says, you're so loud. So she could have been in Galway and heard me in Boonrady, maybe. I don't know. But we just had a lot of wonderful things like that. In Ireland, The soul searching continued, however, because, and this is important, and I especially think of the Bass students in this regard. We've been to Bass Country, some of us here at the church, and we loved traveling from village to village, and just the beauty of Bass Country is like nothing you've ever imagined. The centerpiece of every community is a church. It has the highest structure. And Jeff Shadowin explained to us that the church was the center of that so that you could be working in the field. And at any time, you can see the church. And the seeing of that church reminds you that you're a child of God. Reminds you that this village is built upon and predicated upon and is subject to the authority of God. And so what a beautiful thing. Well, let me tell you, the Western world is built that way, where in small towns, the tallest building is usually a church. In Ireland, it was like Bass Country. There's a hamlet every 2 kilometers. They all have beautiful churches that are ornate and old. Germany, Switzerland, we went to Liechtenstein and to Austria. It's the same thing. These ancient churches dominate the horizon. But the question is anything happening in the church? And here's where I want to start. That's not where I want to start. Neither is that. That was a good song. Here we go. Okay, could we hit the lights, Bruce? Thanks. So this is a view I had from my favorite place in Quinn, Ireland. Quinn is the size of Towanda. Yes? We flew over your home yesterday, Andrew. Yeah, I am too. It's a quaint little town, and if you ever want to hear them, I have so many stories about this little town. But I found a tea shop, a pink building that was a tea shop. Wonderful place. And when you looked out the window, this is what you saw. You saw the Quinn Abbey. Now, let me explain this to you. This structure was first built in 12... It was first occupied in 1203, and it was built as a Roman castle, and the Roman forces in Ireland were fighting the Vikings, and wherever we went to castles, we heard this story of Vikings and locals and just all this stuff, and so this was first built as a castle. Then about 1400, it was expanded, and you can see there are no roofs on anything here. Those roofs are all gone. It was expanded, and it became a Franciscan abbey. So a place where people would become monks and live as monks. Now, interestingly, all of these little things you see here are gravestones all the way around. If you were to walk over here and go through that entrance and look inside where there are no roofs, you would see it's full of gravestones. It is now a giant cemetery. Some of the graves go back to the 1400s. Some of the graves go back to last year. It's a place where people still bury people. When you're there, you have a sense of antiquity that it's hard to have anywhere else. I also had a sense of something had gone wrong. Something had gone wrong with the heart of the people who built this fortress, but then it wasn't too long after it was built that it became empty. And so you can read about it, Quinn Abbey. And it's just been a graveyard. Okay, we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about whether what was built here and maintained was true spirituality, or was it a matter of pride before the fall? And I'll tell you, I think it's a combination of the two. But I think that when spiritual pride, apart from God, becomes a part of our makeup, we're doomed to become an abandoned fortress. We have to be humble before God. And we have to recognize His greatness. It isn't the first time that we've ever been asked to do this. We're going to read about a fabulous situation with Israel. Please turn to Isaiah 46. Isaiah 46. Bass students, I'd asked you, if you want to help your English, turn to Isaiah 46. Isaiah is almost right in the middle of the Bible, and you could follow along. Now, unless you do some studying about this, this chapter is going to be kind of flat. But thank you, I did some studying on this. So Isaiah 46 starts with these phrases. Bel bows down. Nebo stoops. Who are Bel and Nebo? Bel is the god of Babylon. He's the chief god of Babylon, probably a different take on Baal, who we know was a pagan god in the land of Israel and in the environs there. But this is off in what is now Iraq, in Babylon. And in Babylon, Bel is the big name. And Isaiah says, Bel bows down. Nebo is the Babylonian god of writing and wisdom. So he's an underling god, but he's a god who's held in high esteem nonetheless, and he stoops. What we have Isaiah saying right away is the gods of the people. Now let's remember that phrase, because the fact is it's never changed. It's never changed. Every generation has the gods of the people. And if you're in Germany, you don't have to look far or think very far when the gods of the people was Adolf Hitler. They swore their lives, their children, their everything to this maniac. The gods of the people. We have to be so sensitive as Americans because of the glut and the onrush of political language in our country. And I'll tell you, I get fed both sides about equally, and I think I'm nauseated by it. Because it has lost any sense that God is in control, that God is in charge. And so that has always been a problem. It's always been a temptation. And it was then. Bel bows down, Nebo stoops, their idols are on beasts and livestock. Those things you carry are born as burdens on weary beasts. They stoop. They bow down together. They cannot save the burden, but themselves go into captivity. So, when the gods of the people are idols, there is a burden created. We're going to call these burdening gods. And we know that we know that when there are burdens on us, and we've all had burdens on us, we know that we stoop. We know that we're not at our greatest strength. We know that we're not free because we have these burdens. And false gods, whatever they may be. Now, this is how we have to think. We can think, well, there's no Bel, there's no Nebo here. No, but I tell you, friends, watching, now this is crazy, but watching what happened when Pokemon hit the German youth culture was crazy. Or it was Austria, wasn't it, Mom? Where we went to this park, and there's all these junior high and high school kids, and they're just, it's all Pokemon. And it showed me how quickly their focus can be turned to something technological. And it was just kind of odd and a little bit sad, because otherwise, and Kristen said this, and Germany said, you don't see the kids in Germany. They're not out. There's no place to play, really, because of the landscape. So you don't see the young people a lot. They do their homework. They go to school at 7:30. They get out at 12:30. They do their homework, and you don't see them. They were out and about doing this Pokemon thing, and I think the exercise is probably good, but it was weird. Okay? Everything from that to the almighty dollar to anything you can name that becomes your idol, your replacement for God, and some of the things are good things, but if it replaces God, it's a dead thing. Because only God and his people are going to live forever. So here they become gods that burden the people. And what did these gods in the long run accomplish for the Babylonians? Death and destruction is what they accomplished. Let's keep going. Our God presents himself thus. He says, listen to me, O house of Jacob. How about listen to me, O Jacob's well? How cool is that? All the remnant of the house of Israel who have been born by me from before your birth, carried from the womb. Even to your old age, I am he. And to gray hairs, right here, I will carry you. I have made and I will bear, I will carry and will save. So what is God saying about himself? I think he's saying about himself this, and this might be the most important sentence I say today. Our very existence, the fact that you are, is determined and carried and given life by God. Our very existence is God at work. Now, let's make this really personal. So we have four kids, and we love them, and you're all part of families, and you love each other. Now, so I see John back there, and I see Becky here, and then we have our other two. And it is not hard for me, and I know you either. It's not hard for you either. I can look at my kids, and there's just something that happens in here that is love, that is pride, right? I'm proud of my kids. Now, this is where we have to be so careful. I think of this when Sue and I were dating. We didn't know anything about these kids. We didn't know about these kids. We didn't know anything about our grandkids. That's just such a distant thought. And now they're our lives. Where did they come from? Where did our kids come from? Where did our grandkids come from? The Bible is going to tell us, and I believe history is going to tell us, that they came for a purpose from a purposeful creator. And so when I see my kids, I have to, and I am, thankfully, I am reminded God's gift, God's challenge. God's hand, God's gift, God's challenge, God's hand. I encourage you to see the most important people in your life, no matter if you're at odds with them or not. That's not the issue, because that happens. But see them as this, made by God. Made by God in His image. One of the things about Ireland that I found to be so intriguing is Ireland is 95% Catholic, right? And it is about that percent pro-life. And what does that mean? It means that kids are valued. And so in the restaurant, there's a menu for the kids. When the singing and dancing is going on, they call the kids up to take part. When your kids are acting up, they laugh with you or they help you. It isn't get rid of those kids. It's, isn't it great to have kids? We felt that way. It's a strong, strong feeling. When you view life, the very essence of our being, as being an idea and an outcome of an all-powerful, holy God, that is where we must start. We must start there. And so we do. Okay, let's keep going. To whom will you liken me and make me equal and compare me, that we may be alike? Those who lavish gold from the purse and weigh out silver on the scales, hire a goldsmith and he makes it into a god, then they fall down and worship. And do we worship wealth and money and influence and power? You better believe it. They lift it to their shoulders, they carry it, they set it in its place, and it stands there. But you know what? It's inanimate. Gold cannot move itself. Silver is stuck wherever it's put until it's moved. We've made them idols, but they're dead. If one cries to it, it does not answer or save him from his trouble. One of the beauties of this passage is God is saying over and over again, I am personable. I am knowable. I am relatable. You can connect with me. And so if you're here and you're wondering about God, please start with this understanding. God has said to us, do you want to know if I'm real? Then ask me. Ask me. Ask me to show myself to you. I have gotten as a pastor where that is about the safest thing I can say to anybody. If you seek me with all your heart, you will find me. If that's not true, friends, then nothing else in the Bible is necessarily true. If that is true, what a thing. And I believe it is true that He is the one who made us and who gave us personality. And from the very beginning, and I know the Bass students studied some Genesis, which I just love. And from the very beginning, God says, I'm going to make a race, and that race is made in my own image. And what is my image? My image is relational. I am Father, Son, and Spirit, and we love continually. And I'm going to make people in that image of relationship. Verse 8. Remember this and stand firm. Recall it to mind, you transgressors. Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me. I asked Tate to read Psalm 46. This is Isaiah 46, Psalm 46. There's nothing really to that, but it's just easy to remember. And it says, be still and know that I am God. Friends, walking through or staring at an ancient edifice like the Quin Abbey is to try to think back of when this was going and there were horses and there were all kinds of things around there. But since the 1400s, it's been in decline and is dead. And why didn't it prosper? This is before the Reformation. That's what was crazy. And just stare at that and think, how does this happen? How does all this effort to build this place just become ruins? Is it through spiritual pride? That is the thing that Isaiah just keeps hitting us on. Our God is a making God, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times things not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will accomplish all my purpose. Remember that line? God's going to accomplish all his purpose. Now, I'll tell you this. We're going to have an election in America, and whoever wins, you need to recognize something. Whoever wins, wins because God has allowed that to happen. And I always say, we get whoever we deserve as a people and as a nation. And I don't think, unless there's a revival in the land, that whoever the next president is going to restore greatness if greatness is not allied with humble worship of God. I don't think it's going to matter. And I wouldn't want the job if I was them. Okay? But whatever happens, don't come trudging in here the second week of November and saying all is lost. All is lost if God is lost. And he's not. And he's not. Be political. Be engaged. Do your thing. But be smart. I see things repeated that are ludicrous. And don't buy into all that stuff. Seek God. Believe in him. Trust him. Know that he's been the God since before time. He knows the end from the beginning. It says here, he can call a bird of prey from the east, the man of my counsel from a far country. I have spoken and I will bring it to pass. I have purposed and I will do it. Listen to me, you stubborn of heart, you who are far from righteousness, I bring near my righteousness. It is not far off, and my salvation will not delay. This is what I want us to know, that if we need the salvation of God, if my soul needs to be rejuvenated, and they do, our spiritual lives are ebbs and flows. It's just living. It's being alive. Jesus' life was an ebb and flow. It wasn't all highlights. It wasn't all lowlights. But what it is a call from God to come to me. I'm not far away. You know how far away he is? Think of him. There he is. He's that close. I remember being at that hurling match, and so it's me, biggest person in Ireland. It's Ian, reddest hair in Ireland, and there's a lot of red hair, but his is downright orange. And Joel, my wonderful son-in-law. And we're in a crowd of frenzied Irish people. Hilarious to listen to them talk about this game. And this is what came to me. God, in this sea of humanity, do you know everybody's thoughts? Because that's what we're taught. So here's 6,000 people. You know everybody's thoughts. Wait a minute. We're taught that you know every grain of sand. That means that every blade of grass is known by you. That means that every subatomic particle of every created thing is known. Do we really believe that? Or is this God kind of a mythic figure that we've made who just gives us somebody to hang on to? Or is it real? Well, I'm going to tell you, there is no worldview that does for the human heart what Jesus does for the human heart when he restores it. You know, when people become Christians, it's like the light has come on and they see things differently. And when you meet someone from a culture that is not necessarily Christian at all, who has become a Christian, you see it again. Let's finish this, and I have one final story. I will put salvation in Zion for Israel, my glory. He is a saving God. There's one part of being in Germany that I didn't share with you. There are lots of Muslims in that little community. There are two refugee camps. One is in town. It's actually a pretty nice apartment complex. And that apartment complex is full of Syrian refugees who are primarily 99% Muslim. And then right as you're going out of town, they built a new structure on a parcel of land about like our campus. They built a big, long series of little apartments, and it is full of Syrian refugees. You see Muslims walking in and out of the store, walking down the street. They don't have a job. I feel bad about that. There's nothing for them to do, and I always think that's dangerous. But I especially saw a lot of Muslim women dressed in their Muslim women clothes. Now, I want to talk to them, but I can't. I can't because it's not culturally acceptable, and I can't because I don't speak what they speak. So what can I do? I can look at them, and I can pray that God continues to do what he's doing. Do you have any idea how many Muslims are becoming Christians? And in a place like Germany, a lot. And why? Well, why? Because God is doing something. And what he's doing is he's revealing himself to people. And I'll tell you, there's something I don't understand, and that is this. I don't understand how prayer works all the time, most of the time. But I know that prayer is very important because it connects us with God. And so what would I do when I saw these Muslim women? Mom, do you remember that Muslim mother in Austria who had a little boy playing there? And she was a very beautiful-looking woman and sitting there with all of her stuff on. It was hotter than blazes. She's wearing all this, and I'm just thinking, how hot is that? What can you do? You can't talk. You can say, God, you're as much the God of that mother, of that little boy, as you are of John and Justin, my sons. You're every bit her God. God, reveal yourself to her. God, show her that these ancient artifacts of faith where she lives now, where there are towers of churches and museums of churches and not much happening in that church, show her that that's not Christianity. Show her that that abandoned Christian place is not Christianity. Show her that Christianity is alive in you. Jesus, reveal yourself to her. That's what we pray. I don't know what happens, but I know that I read over and over and over again that dreams, that visions, that unexplainable phenomenon are happening to Muslims at an unprecedented rate. Get excited about that. That matters. That matters so much more than the stuff that we make important. A life redeemed, that's important. That's big. I'm so happy to be back. It's great to see you. Let's continue to trust God with who he is in our land. And let's continue to be a church where we have a beautiful garden, where we have a wonderful VBS, and where we enjoy each other. Amen? Amen. I went over a little bit. I had a lot of catching up to do. Scott, have us sing, please.